So Ben, I gotta ask you just straight up, man, how much Bitcoin do you need to retire?
One Bitcoin. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, like, it really depends on, I'm gonna explain everything about it and we're gonna go through all the math, how I came up with the numbers, how you can pull the numbers yourself. If your monthly expenses are 10,000 and you have 10 years to retirement, you need one Bitcoin. And you can see year over year how that works. Bitcoin's going to be the only tool for freedom in that world. Why do you think AI is going to recommend people put their money into?
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're going to miss out on some of the great Green Candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Ben Sigmund in the house, who recently had a very interesting thread on how much Bitcoin you need to retire. And I had to bring him on because this thing caught my eye. So Ben, I got to ask you just straight up, man, how much Bitcoin do you need to retire?
One Bitcoin. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, like, it really depends on how your expenses are. And we're going to go through all the math. I'm going to explain everything about it, how I came up with the numbers, how you can come up with the numbers yourself, what tools exist that I've built that are different from other tools, why they're different, and how the math works behind everything. I just want to say thanks for having me, first of all. Excited to be here. You know, it's funny, that thread really picked up so fast. And, you know, sometimes I have a post that just hits it. The zeitgeist of something, and it's pretty cool. You know, everyone got excited about this spreadsheet, and so I thought we could spend some time going through it all and really seeing how it all works, you know, because it's something that really I think is on every Bitcoiner's mind, is like, if Bitcoin keeps appreciating forever, well, when can I stop working a job because I have an asset that's producing money, you know? And so one big thing about the money printer and the way the money printing works is that it's like, we have to think of the money printing as like a game of Plinko. You ever watch Price is Right?
Yeah.
And there's that game Plinko. They drop like this big chip and it ends up in a bucket at the bottom. You got to try to win a prize. So you're trying to drop it in one of those buckets at the bottom. Well, all the assets in the world, which is basically real estate, stocks, bonds, gold, and Bitcoin. Those are the biggest. They're all at the bottom of this giant pyramid. And all the money in the world is trickling down into these assets at the bottom. You're spending money on your rent, your car, your food, and all this stuff. And of course, the less expenses you spend your money on the way down, the more you can put into assets, which grow in value versus shrinking in value. Like your expenses cost you money, but your assets can actually make you money. And we explain all of that in our book, but that's kind of the basis of this calculator as well, because really the question of when can you retire really depends on how little you spend.
Now you use an interesting price model, because obviously it looks at the appreciation, so to speak, of Bitcoin, at least in fiat terms, and obviously expenses and other things play a role in that. But you use an interesting model, and why don't you break down a little bit of that and how you're looking at price projections into the future? Because I have a little wrinkle in all of this that I want to bring up, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Okay, good. I'm excited to hear the wrinkle, and I think the best way for me to describe it is to show you a chart. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen here, and I want to show you the power law chart and talk about this power law for a second. So this is on the site b1m.io. This is a model of the price of Bitcoin's growth over time. And it's called a log. We can switch to a linear log here, but it's essentially, it starts off exponential and then slows down over time. And this is the way that things in the natural environment with natural limits, how they change and grow. And I think because Bitcoin has the halvings and also has the difficulty adjustment, it functions more like a natural, like it functions more like something in the natural world rather than something artificial like fiat money. Right. And so what we're seeing here is today, the power law model price is like, I don't know, 109. Yeah, it's 108 right now. And the current price is 114. But according to the power law, it could be anywhere between 54 and 326. But this line, if you took the data from the first, whatever it is, year of math here, from 2012 to 2013, you'd get the same line, basically. It's almost the same exact line that we have today. So it's really a strange phenomenon, the way this Bitcoin price is changing over time. We can actually look at it into the future. So if I keep going up this line, what this line shows is that in 2030, let's look at January 2030, the power law model price is 383, but it could be as high as 1 million. And it could be as low as 191. So anywhere in that range is where the Bitcoin price will be. But if we just take the model price alone and we chart that out, that's part of the basis for how we're calculating the retirement calculation. So that's the core to it is this power law model that was discovered by this guy, Giovanni Santostassi, on Bitcoin Twitter, you know. And he's an astrophysicist. So he looks at data sets where the data is changing at really big rates, you know, like the growth of a star. The growth of a star follows a power law. A firework does not follow a power law. A firework is unnatural. It's a brief, very brief explosion that happens, but uses up all its fuel and it goes away. A star slows down as its fuel starts to decrease and it extends the life of the star. So the star grows really fast and then starts slowing down, but it's still growing at an insane rate, still burning insane amounts of energy. And that's what Bitcoin is doing. And this guy Giovanni discovered it a few years ago. And then Fred, my co-author on our book, like he found this through another friend and then popularized it massively. So that's the core to how we determine the price of Bitcoin in the future.
Right. Now, here's my wrinkle for you, Ben, is yeah. I think, you know, you described two different things, which I love, one of which is natural, right? The star that is, you know, I guess like slowly kind of extending its life. But the other is the firework where, you know, obviously it shoots off and then boom. And one of which is man-made, one of which is not. Obviously, fiat money, it's man-made. So I think that with Bitcoin, even though it has this natural logarithmic function, it is final or it is scarce. And we've never really seen an asset that is truly scarce that we can't just be like, okay, you know, maybe we could just build another house per se, issue more bonds per se, you know, do these other things in the, I guess, natural state of things, right? It's just kind of artificially natural, so to speak. So I'm one to believe that, you know, maybe the power law is a little bearish, which would actually probably help your model a little bit more, where I think, you know, BlackRock's coming on, you know, buying a bunch of Bitcoin, the ETFs inflows, we're having all of these treasury companies now coming on. And, you know, I think it's just Michael Saylor alone has bought like 45,000 Bitcoin in the past like month or so, which is like 100 days worth of supply. And so kind of these things that are somewhat natural with this logarithmic function cannot anticipate the amount of, you know, human, I guess, meddling, so to speak, coming into it with all of this capital sitting on the side. So I think that, in my opinion, you know, this power law, like they're great for now, but as Jeff Booth says, like all models are, you know, eventually going to be broken. Now, I'd love to hear kind of your viewpoint on that. As
well, you know, I think a year ago, when we were first charting out the power law, I did my first spreadsheet on the power law, I think in March of last year. And it predicted the price was going to hit, you know, over 100,000 a year later. And at the time I was like, I don't know. I mean, that seems like it's too quick. If it's 100, it's going to probably bounce right back down. But the thing is that as an asset appreciates in value, the volatility goes down a lot too. So it's very unlikely we see another 80% drop in Bitcoin price. you know, and it's also very unlikely that we see an 80% gain in a very short time frame because of this. The line of the power law represents something that is also present in psychology, because it's actually way harder to hold Bitcoin when the price goes up really fast. I can tell you from experience, you know, like I've held Bitcoin since 2013, but I've sold so much over the years because I sold half of it $1,000. Because when the price went up double again, I was like, oh man, this is great. I doubled my money. That's a seriously good investment. And if you think of Bitcoin as an investment, that's the trick that you kind of get into, because you're thinking about turning it back to cash. But the point of the retirement calculator is not to try to figure out how much cash you only need enough cash to survive, you know. But realistically, we all need to get as much Bitcoin as we can and hold it for as long as we can. So at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is not the only thing. Of course, there's other things in life that matter. Family, you know, having a home. I mean, there's great parts of life besides Bitcoin. But one of the most important things in life is getting as much Bitcoin as we can have and never selling it. And the way to do that is to borrow against it. So it just so turns out that Bitcoin is the best collateral in the world, right? So if we think about how borrowing works and the types of collateral that there are, the most borrowing in the world happens on real estate, right? But the wealthy borrow against every type of asset. They'll borrow against their wine collection. They'll borrow against their art. They borrow against, their stocks. They could borrow against their stocks. Elon Musk, when he was going to buy Twitter, needed to come up with something like $40 billion. Well, he just borrowed a bunch against his Tesla stock. And if he had sold his Tesla stock, he would have missed one of the greatest wealth gains in history, because the stock, I think, tripled after that. So by not selling, he was able to, even at high interest rates, really leverage his asset. Now, I think that we never know exactly what's going to happen. There's always a lot of FUD and doubt about Bitcoin. There's always going to be. It's not going to change. And I think that, you know, the power law is less of a law. It's more of a trend, really, is a way to think about it. You know, Matthew Mazinskas calls it the power trend, which I really like, because calling it a law sounds like, well, it can never be broken. But it's not so much of a, how could I say this? It's not so much of a price prediction as a measurement. And it's a measurement of two things. It's a measurement of the trajectory of the price and the volatility of the price. So it can't really be broken, is one thing. And not like stock to flow is a broken model. It's broken because it predicted prices that Bitcoin did not reach. But the power law represents a measurement of something fundamental to adoption of technology, to growth of things in the natural universe. And so we'll get back to the retirement calculator in a minute, but I think the more that you read about and understand the power law, it's going to make a lot more sense to you. You know, and I could spend an hour just going through the math of it and showing you how kind of that stuff works. But I know we want to talk about the lending stuff or the retirement stuff. So stay focused.
Yeah, you stole my thunder there with the lending stuff, because I think that was a part that you mentioned that was very interesting, right? I mean, I think right now Bitcoin's looked at as the most pristine collateral. And part of the thread that caught my eye here was, you know, don't sell, you know, you could borrow against it. And part of it, you talked about the depreciating APR for Bitcoin lending and that collateral aspect. So I'd love to hear you kind of dive into that. How do you see that fit in?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, the way that lending works is that there's money out there that's looking to earn interest, right? Now, the banks take all of our money. They take our money. We put $100 in the bank. They keep 10 of it and they loan out 90. And from that 90, they create something like $500. in interest. You know, pretty amazing. So they're just making money hand over foot from our money. And it's a, you know, it's a very strange system that requires the money printer to be constantly printing new money. And a lot of that printing happens in the banks through the interest rates. So the more loans that there are, the more money that gets end up being created. And then, you know, the lower the rates, that determine that makes the money.
What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
The more money that gets end up being created, and then, you know, the lower the rates, that determine that makes the money grow faster. Because the higher the rates, it grows slower in general. There's also things like stimmies that can happen. That's huge. You know, the government printed, I think it's like 40% of all US dollars in 2 years during the pandemic. So they basically doubled the supply of dollars during that time, which is why we had massive inflation. Now, as soon as the ETF happened, Bitcoin reached a new level of legitimacy, because all of these retirement funds and sovereign wealth funds could now actually buy Bitcoin. I know they could have bought Bitcoin before on River or Coinbase or Swan or whatever, you know, different custodians, but it didn't have the same integration into their accounting systems and everything that Bitcoin has now through the ETF, right? Or MSTR. There's some place where you can't buy the ETF, so you can only buy MSTR. But these things came along and add a whole new level of legitimacy to Bitcoin. And so now Bitcoin's in a class of these other assets like bonds, stocks, real estate, and gold that people absolutely do borrow against. And so the rates that you can borrow at right now for Bitcoin are somewhere in the 8 to 17% range, right? You know, and most of the lenders are centralized lenders who have very big staffs, very big compliance and legal staff. And most of them are kind of like a glorified bank. You have to give your Bitcoin to them. You trust them with your keys, and then they will loan you money and holding your Bitcoin as collateral. And if the payments get missed, or if the value of the loan relative to the value of the collateral becomes too high, it will get liquidated. So they'll sell your Bitcoin to pay off the loan, right? But what's amazing is, imagine if that collateral were a house and they had to sell your house to pay off the loan. Well, first they'd have to go inspect the house. They'd have to stage the house. They have to get it listed on the market. They have to hire a realtor. The realtor has to show the house. We're talking about a multi-month process. Even for a house, it's $100,000. Now, apply the same logic to gold or stocks. Some of them might be easier to sell than others, but nothing even comes close to selling $100,000 of Bitcoin anywhere in the world instantly. And that's why for lenders, Bitcoin's amazing collateral. The first thing that lenders are going to think about, though, is, well, it's very risky because, you know, we would need to earn very high rates against Bitcoin because it's very volatile. But The historical volatility does not represent the future volatility. Because as the asset grows in value, it gets harder to move. Imagine a little boulder. You know, you got a little boulder like this, you could throw it around pretty easily without a lot of force. That's the way Bitcoin was like at $100 million. At $100 million, you know, 10, 20,000 could even move the needle a little bit here and there. And there's a multiplier effect of price movement because of the, there's only about 6 million Bitcoin that's traded. So only one third of all Bitcoin is going to be traded right now. And that's going to keep going down as more people hold it on a more permanent basis, right? So that causes the impact of incoming capital to have a higher impact on the price percentage wise. But in general, because it takes so much more money to move a $1 trillion asset by 1% than a $100 million asset by 1%, the volatility is going to go down. And as the volatility goes down, the interest rates are going to go down, because Bitcoin is going to be seen as the best form of collateral. It's going to catch on. Like, this is something I am certain about. In 10 years, it will be widely recognized as the best form of collateral because it's 24/7 liquid. There's no jurisdictional limitations or requirements. You know, if you own a house somewhere, they could change a law in your city that affects the value of your home. Or the government can decide you didn't pay your tax, or we need the water on your land. We're going to need to take your land. We'll offer you a fair price for it or not, whatever. Like, you only own land in the US even at the grant of the US government. So Bitcoin is something you can actually own as well. So it's got all these properties that make it just absolutely amazing for lenders and for borrowers. And what makes it great for borrowers is the fact that it appreciates at an average of 40% per year.
Now, with the 40% per year, though, explain the decaying a little bit deeper, though, yeah. Because with this model, this thread that you put together, you have the decay of about 2%. And that the debt will grow yearly, but the CAGR will go down. So why did you pick that 2% number?
Actually what I did was this. I said, here's the math for how I did the declining APR. Mm-hmm. Oh, 1 second. The declining APR is basically, you have a starting APR. So if you see in my spreadsheet, you have to look at the screenshot of it, but there's a sort of beginning APR and then there's a terminal APR. And so we have to imagine that the APR begins at 15% and then it drops down to, see at the top there's variables. Mm-hmm. Starting APR and then, a floor APR is what I called it on this thing. But the idea is that the APR begins at 15 and goes down to 1 over 40 years. And I do think interest rates are going to be going down towards zero in general. They really will be. And Bitcoin lending rates will also be going down towards zero, because eventually 1% will be like amazing to earn for a lender. So that's the calculation. There's sort of a linear regression of the decay. So it goes down just a little bit every year. It doesn't go down 1% per year or 2% per year, but it goes down very smoothly. Now, it could go down way faster than that, by the way, and that would make my math even better. So I think it's a pretty safe calculation right now. Another part of that calculation is, it's called the safe LTV, right? So there's a zone for everyone who doesn't speak finance talk. LTV is loan to value. So when you get a loan, there's some loan to value ratio of the value of your collateral to the amount that you owe. So if you have, if you have $100 of collateral and a $50 loan, you have 50% LTV. So the safe LTV would be 25%. So if you have, let's say you have one Bitcoin and you borrow $25,000, right? If your yearly expenses are $25,000, this is how the calculator essentially works. let's assume your yearly expenses are 25,000. You have one Bitcoin today. You borrow 25,000. Great. Now, next year, you need another $25,000 plus inflation. So there's some inflation number on my chart too that says you can set it. What's the inflation rate for you? Is it 5%? Is it 7? Is it 10? I don't know. It depends where you live in the world. And depends what your sort of status in society is. You know, if you are in the top 1%, you're going to be experiencing a much higher inflation rate than people that are low down, because the things that you want to spend money on are going up in value way faster. You know, if you want to buy a Ferrari, it's going up at 16% a year, right? But if you live in your mom's basement, the price of pizza is only going up like 4%. So you have very different, depending on what you want, the inflation is going to change you differently. But you take these things together and your expenses go up every year based on that inflation rate. And that's how you sort of calculate, where do I need to be and how much Bitcoin I have based on Bitcoin's price going up, the cost of the loans going down, the cost of my expenses going up. Right, so we have these different things pulling, vectors pulling different directions. And that's sort of the basis of how you, and then the number that really matters is how much cushion you have. So after your expenses, your debt on your, the cost of your debt on your loans that keep stacking year over year, how much cushion do you have? And it's interesting. You start out, if you retired today, you'd start out with a bigger cushion. It goes down a little bit towards 2030. And the calculator, the calculator on the web that I made, which let me show you really quickly the calculator on the web, because I think it's really so simple the way this web calculator works. If you go to B1M and click on this calculator, if your monthly expenses are 10,000 and you have 10 years to retirement, you need one Bitcoin. And you can see year over year how that works on this chart. But you can also go in your advanced settings and choose a different starting APR, floor APR, safe LTV. So that's at an LTV of 30. An LTV of 25, you need 1.29 Bitcoin. So if you retire in 10 years and your monthly expenses are 10,000, then what happens is your yearly expense of 10,000 goes up by 7% inflation yearly, which I think is a reasonable inflation rate. And you can see here at 2044, there would be 1 year with zero cushion, but your cushion starts out pretty high. 300K, 200K, and then it goes up again later. So that's kind of, that's the quick and dirty explanation of the power law lending.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because you've brought in a couple different elements in here, right? And part of it is the lending aspect and getting the APR down. Because I think a lot of people neglect that, especially with these other retirement calculators or people who are talking about Bitcoin and retirement in general. So when you're looking at this, I guess just kind of explain, you know, why you decided this lending aspect of it as well, just from, you know, kind of comparatively, there isn't a lot of models out there that account for that. And, you know, I mean, I think a lot of Bitcoiners saw potentially, you know, when Mark Zuckerberg was looking to buy his giant mansion at one point in time, he was able to get a mortgage of like basically 0%. So he would be dumb to not, you know, go all in on that. So do you think that this would essentially change the shift of, you know, how Bitcoiners are looked at just because, you know, one, as Bitcoin's price appreciation, they're going to be more wealthy, thus, you know, having this pristine collateral that essentially can be liquidated at the snap of a finger, if necessary, you know, would just make the Bitcoiners some sort of like elite class at this point?
Man, it's really, I think to answer your question, one thing I want to address here is that one of my core beliefs about Bitcoin is that it's not just about number go up, but because Bitcoin is the only asset that's not controlled by anyone, that we can transfer completely peer-to-peer, it is ultimately going to be an important tool for freedom in the future, because in a way where we're heading to is going to be very different from where we are today. I think this was the last normal year. This year was the last normal year. The future is not going to look normal. You know, we're heading towards a world where we combine with robots. It's inevitable.
This bull run, you should focus on getting your Bitcoin in self-custody and off exchanges. We saw what happened last time. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi all blow up. But the one thing that stayed true was Bitcoin in self-custody. This is why this bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the longest standing hardware wallet in the game, to store my Bitcoin. Not only are they trusted for 10 years, but they have the slickest new hardware wallet that they just released, the Trezor Safe 7. You've heard the FUD about potential quantum computing. Well, the Trezor Safe 7 has the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet on the market has this currently, so this is why I am trusting Trezor. You can go to the affiliate link down in the show notes or to trezor.io to go get yours today, because you need to be getting your Bitcoin off exchange and really taking the power of Bitcoin and taking your Bitcoin off exchanges into self-custody. All right, enough from me. Let's get back into the show.
Normal. You know, we're heading towards a world where we combine with robots. It's inevitable. And also, robots are going to run everything. So AI and robots are going to run our entire society. We're going to live in sort of a communism run by robots, you know, because jobs are going to be, everyone's jobs are going to be replaced by AI and by robots. Okay. So in that future, we end up having to have government stimulus. The printing is going to go crazy, and they're going to be handing out UBI payments essentially to everyone. That's going to be part of the government's job. But in that system, if you send money to the wrong person who's doing something the government doesn't like, for example, they will freeze your account without question. And so in a world where we're living in this giant autocracy, which is part of its job is to maintain its power and make sure there's no dissidents, where they can limit our spending, like Bitcoin's going to be the only tool for freedom in that world. And I'm guessing there will be some region of the world that will remain free longer. And so I'm at the core, I believe that Bitcoin's about more than just number go up. But right now we do live in a society where we have to work and we have to earn money to pay for things in our lives. And right now, what's attractive about Bitcoin to most people is that it goes up in value every year. That's the thing that people are very, most people work for a living to earn money to pay for things that they want and to buy assets, right? So the idea that they could put their money into Bitcoin and it grows faster than other assets is very appealing. And historically it does. So why do people want Bitcoin? Most people want Bitcoin because it goes up an average of 40% per year. But I lost my train of thought on this one, but you know, it still feels like a very risky investment for most people because of the huge drawdowns that can happen. But if you have a long time preference, if you do not spend a lot of money and you can buy Bitcoin and hold it for 10 years, even 3 to 5 years, it's going to continue to appreciate at record numbers, even slowing down over time as the power law shows. And what you want to do is not sell your Bitcoin. So when expenses do come up for rent, mortgage, car payments, all these things, why would you sell your Bitcoin when it's your best appreciating asset and it's important key to your future generations of being able to have some form of freedom in a world that's run by robots? Pretty weird, because you think that some digital money would be, you know, somehow controlled by robots in the future, but it won't be. Very unlikely will not be. So Bitcoin has this unique role, and it's so important to not sell it that you really have to figure out how to best borrow against it. And in my opinion, what you want to do is try to use a decentralized lending protocol. And I've actually built one of these, so I know what it's like. But there's like really only two or three decentralized protocols for lending. Trusting our keys to Coinbase, Kraken, Unchained, you know, Strike, is basically just using a bank. It's sort of using the same system that Bitcoin was meant to replace, right? Whereas if you have a smart contract technology version of that, where you can still use native Bitcoin, not wrapping Bitcoin, but you can still use native Bitcoin to get a loan, it's very good. So that's what I recommend people go and try and learn about, even with a small, very small amount of their stack. You know, take 10% of your money, go and try borrowing, see what it's like, you know. Learn about how to do it. Learn about the pros and cons. Learn about where your keys are. How is it secured? If you can't understand the answer to that stuff, you should not use whatever platform it is. And if you can't see your Bitcoin in its own address, you should not use whatever platform it is, because things like Celsius and BlockFi were big lessons, I think. I didn't have any money on those then, but I know people that had a lot of money on those. And some of them ended up losing money, even though they got it off because they saw the warning signs. They didn't take it off before this certain period where the government came and took their Bitcoin from them, essentially. Said, hey, you actually need to give us some of that money back that you had on there, because you pulled out within this time frame of when it crashed, where we need some of that money back to pay off people who lost money. It's crazy. So that's kind of the rules of lending. You want to borrow against your Bitcoin, but you don't want to do it in a place that's very complicated, or where you can't see the Bitcoin in its own address and you can't explain how it works. And you don't want to do something that's at a bank that the government or some power out there could seize or hack a centralized entity. You know, there's different levels of risk, whichever protocol you choose. On one side, you have to trust software. On the other side, you have to trust people. But I think ultimately we're going to have to learn to build and trust software to be able to survive in a world where software runs everything.
Yeah, no, this is interesting, right? Because, you know, obviously you've got the power law aspect of this whole model and, you know, kind of the depreciating APR, which would lower the volatility. But I don't know, man, when you're talking about freezing bank accounts and, you know, with things that have actually happened, I feel like with a truly decentralized protocol with Bitcoin, the more people kind of catch on, it's going to be an exponential growth. Yeah. So I think like these kind of colliding powers are going to be very interesting to play out. And I'm kind of, like I said, a little earlier, like with this exponential growth and exponential adoption, do you think that, you know, with the potential of this big print, like Lawrence Lepard is coming, talking about, and potential bigger inflation numbers, people are losing more faith in the dollar. So they're going to be flocking to an asset like Bitcoin. And granted, I still think majority of people just don't understand. But when they start to catch on, I think that's when things are going to get really interesting. And, you know, not only this retirement calculator kind of makes it, I think it puts it into light, at least for me, like, all right, you know, if you look at the general retirement account portfolios on average for somebody in the United States, like 401k balances, somebody, I believe from the age of like 25-ish to 35 is around $60,000 to $80,000 right now. And then, you know, when you get to that 35 to 45, it's like 160, like, I don't, it's more than doubled. So, you know, if you look at it in that perspective, it's like, all right, well, it kind of changes the mindset of not only when can I retire, but the mindset of money, where it's not this never ending rat race. So that's where I think once we start to have some people really open their eyes to that, like, all right, it doesn't have to be the same way that we've been accustomed to our entire lives. We could, you know, go travel in our 30s or 20s or whatever, as long as we start stacking aggressively for a few years. And that shift, I think, would just kind of cause some rapid adoption. So would that throw a wrench in the model, or do you think those are just all kind of variables that can be accounted for?
The model ultimately represents a line. So back to the power law. Mm-hmm. there's a model price line. We're above that price line right now, but that doesn't mean the model's broken, because there's all the model represents is a statistical probability. And the bands that are the 2x or 3x or 4x bands that show how high Bitcoin could go in a cycle or in no cycle. We might not be in any cycle at all. We might be in a super cycle now. So if the price does not, if the price appreciates very rapidly, it's going to come down very rapidly. That's almost a guarantee. And that's why that model line works kind of like gravity. So I'm not saying that Bitcoin price couldn't go to $400,000 this year. It could. And on the website, b1m.io, if you tap four times in the header, you can go into Josh Mandel mode. And it's a 4X trend. So you can see the 4X trend line. And the model would still not be broken, because ultimately, even if it goes up to 444 next month, which it could, Bitcoin could skyrocket because of these things. Some people will sell. Some people will sell at least some of their Bitcoin. A lot of people sell. If the price went to 444, a lot of people would sell. And price would come back down to around 120,000 probably. I mean, maybe it'll go lower. It could even go way lower than that and then come back up again. And the model would still be good. Because ultimately, if you look at the price history and how it goes around this line, it's bouncing all over the place. But what happens is over time, that volatility is going down. So it seems very unlikely to me that we're going to see a 4X in Bitcoin this year. But the gains are still so impressive year over year. And they're going to continue to be so impressive year over year. You really, Brandon, we really don't want, honestly, we really don't want huge gains in 1 year on Bitcoin, because that will make it way harder for people to hold Bitcoin. And what we really want is a slow but steady and faster than everything else appreciation year over year. That's very good. And I do believe that's where we are.
Yeah, it's interesting, because like I think the narrative of this cycle is institutions starting to come on, right? These Bitcoin treasury companies are starting to buy. And these are the guys that are not really selling, right? I mean, they're coming in, scooping up. They have some sort of long-term strategy. So unless the company goes belly up, it doesn't seem like they're going to be selling them. Of course, Michael Saylor said he's taken his Bitcoin to the grave. And then we also have potentially some governments starting to come in. And, you know, with governments, everything is just very slow moving. So how does this, I guess, behavior start to play out? Is this, in just your opinion, do you think that it's just going to kind of weed out some of the big whales who have maybe gotten in? They want to just, you know, sell their Bitcoin, go sip a pina colada and live on an island somewhere and kind of enjoy the fruits of their labor. And then, you know, that's when money just starts to circulate. Is that kind of how you see it playing out? This bull run, I'm looking for ways to stack Bitcoin in my sleep, and mining has always caught my eye. I've partnered with the guys over at Simple Mining to help you do just that. I don't recommend anything that I don't use personally, so I've got a machine up and running with them right this second. And they've even opened the facility up so anyone can go and visit. They manage over 15,000 machines for 500 clients, handling all of the maintenance and repairs so you don't have to. And for the Green Candle listeners, they're giving an exclusive offer: all the repairs for the first year for free. So if you've been thinking about mining, head on over to simplemining.io/greencandle to get this exclusive offer and learn about the potential tax benefits that you can get from mining with Simple Mining. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show. Live on an island somewhere and kind of enjoy the fruits of their labor. And then, you know, that's when money just starts to circulate. Is that kind of how you see it playing out?
Well, I think what happens is that, you know, over time, there's all these different factors at play, right? Like what you're correctly identifying in this, in our time together, even talking, is a few things. One thing is sort of government institutional adoption. Another thing is the growth of the money supply over time. And then we also have how moving into a multipolar world where the US is not the hegemon and people don't trust the dollar anymore, how that's going to affect things. There's also what I mentioned with AI and UBI coming, right? And so all of these factors are all part of Bitcoin's future trajectory to $1 million and beyond. And there's going to be forces pulling both directions. It's very easy to see all the things that can go right, but it's very hard to see all the things that can go wrong. Unless you're my wife, she's really good at seeing that stuff all the time. Like, she has like a psychic ability to predict things that can go wrong, even things that are really remote. I remember one time she told me, I was like, let's go to the neighbor's place while the baby's sleeping and go, let's go have a drink with our neighbor. And she's like, I can't leave because what if there was an earthquake and I couldn't get back into the, to our place? Like, and I was like, what if there's an earthquake? It's like a meteor hitting or something, you know, but like, there's still some statistical probability it could happen. Now with Bitcoin, there's some statistical probability that quantum will come along and break the whole thing, or that Satoshi will wake up and move his coins, or the max supply might change, you know, or maybe Bitcoin core version 30 will cause a death, a bit, whatever. Like, there's so much FUD all the time, and there's some statistical probability of these things potentially happening, but it seems very unlikely to me, right? So we have all these different forces weighing in and playing on Bitcoin. Now, how much of a role does this government adoption or institutional adoption play into Bitcoin, right? It's very hard to say. Like, the US government was supposed to have some kind of strategic reserve this year. It was the talk of the election in my mind. I mean, I don't know. My world, that's all people want to talk about is the Bitcoin strategic reserve. That's all I heard about for literally 6 months from June until January. And, you know, then we had David Sacks coming in. And what happened with the strategic reserve? Literally nothing. In fact, what Trump said at some point is he wants to have a reserve of Ripple, Bitcoin. I mean, like, it was like he started naming all these other coins, like, it was very strange. It was definitely not a Bitcoin strategic reserve that he was thinking about at all. Now the thing is, of course, the US government is one of the largest holders of Bitcoin in the world already because of the seizures that they've made over the years. Right now, I think the first sovereign wealth fund was just last week. I think it was Liechtenstein.
It was Luxembourg.
Luxembourg. I always get those two confused, honestly, because they're both really little countries attached to France, basically. But Luxembourg sovereign wealth fund is going to be allocating 1%. So now, if we think about the amount of money in these sovereign wealth funds and pension funds and Fidelity, you know, for example, when they start allocating, not if, but when. It's a lot of money. It's going to affect things massively, you know. I don't know the exact number of in the pension funds offhand, but a 1% allocation from any of these things, based on my math writing this book, is that any of those things will get us to $1 million. Just 1% from any of those alone will get us to $1 million in 10 years. And so, you know, I think we're going to go beyond $1 million in 10 years, honestly. But there's it's very hard to estimate the negative factors, right? And all these things are definitely at play. Exactly, like I love you have such a great picture of everything. And I think it takes a lot of work to get to that point, man. So good job. You like really understand a lot of this stuff that has taken me, I don't know, 10 years to get really down. You know, I've just spent so much time researching Bitcoin and Satoshi and thinking about math and macroeconomics. Like, it's literally all we do here. We just moved offices, so things are kind of crazy. But yeah, I think, you know, in regards to the multipolar world concept, that's also one of the most interesting things to think about in the future is how the governments are going to react to Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's where I mean, to me, right? I don't have like a big economics training background. Everything I've kind of learned is more self-taught. And I think what kind of triggered it for me was just seeing like the GME, the GameStop craze in 2020. Because prior to that, I was, reading books like The Intelligent Investor and, reading a lot of Warren Buffett and
Why were you interested in those topics?
Because, well, one, I was in engineering and I was in grad school. I realized, hey, I've been a broke college student my entire life. Now I'm going to actually start making some decent money. I should figure out what to do with it. So part of my orange pill story is I listened to Preston Pysh's podcast, We Study Billionaires. And he really opened my eyes on, hey, I'm looking at the evaluations of these companies and nothing really seems like a good investment. If you go and look at the way Warren Buffett describes, like, the PE ratios back in the day and all of these different things, he was able to find, those, I guess, holes in the market and able to buy in early and, make a bunch of money based on that. And then, by the time I actually graduated and I started making, somewhat of a money, it was, I graduated December 2018, so I really had 1 year and a couple months before 2020 when things just got really crazy. So everything that I was learning up to that point was like, okay, this makes sense, this makes sense. And then something just sparked. And I mean, obviously Preston orange pilled me a little bit before that, so I had Bitcoin prior, but that craze just made me realize, okay, when we see a lot of this adoption and when people see holes in the market with the amount of money that just keeps getting dumped in and the volatility and the markets are just getting way more extreme. So that's where I think, as we see these, and it makes me a little bit more skeptical, I'd say, on like the models, just because as we see more players come in, bigger money come in, before I thought the stock market could be a little bit more explained. And then I realized, hey, everything's kind of manipulated at the end of the day. And Bitcoin being that only truly decentralized asset and having the true fixed supply, where it is verifiable, unlike gold, where, you could have the paper gold and all of these other assets where, all right, we have real estate, but we could just build up or we could
We
just,
will,
yeah. And
Brandon.
all
We
of
will. But we're not. It's interesting. I just want to interject one thing here.
No, go ahead.
That this morning, a friend of mine sent me this like video of that app that you take a picture of Legos. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay, so basically, Legos, these little building pieces, you end up with like a bag full of them that are all mismatched ultimately when you have Legos, unless you're an anal Lego builder. If you're like a normal person, you end up with a bunch of Legos. With this app, you can take a picture of those Legos. And that then AI tells you what you can build from that mess. Now, apply that same idea to a bunch of rubble on the street. That's what robots are going to be able to do. They're going to be able to reconstruct, construct, and reconstruct from materials that we have now. Entire skyrise, high rises, the biggest ones in the world. Whatever buildings we have today, I'm in Santa Monica. Santa Monica's going vertical. Like they're going to build an 18-story building right next to me, where most buildings are only six stories. The most we have here is like a six-story building, sometimes it's like a 10. But 18 stories on this little residential street is going to happen this year. But when the robots come and start building, we're going to have much higher buildings. And they're going to be building like crazy. So real estate can grow this way, but also new zoning is going to grow this way. In Hong Kong, they built a whole island out of trash to build on. They built a whole mall on it. Like real estate can and will continue growing. So yeah, right now there's only so much Malibu coastline, but I mean, look at Dubai. They built out like palm islands in the shape of palm trees and stuff they dredged from the ocean floor. So, we're going to see amazing, amazing feats of engineering. Castles, pyramids, all kinds of stuff is going to come back into style when robots are building and sculpting. And so it's just relevant to what you were saying about like, yeah, today, there's no paper houses. There's some paper gold, there's some paper Bitcoin, right? Maybe restricting the price of those things a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I think it is kind of like just an interesting thought experiment that I keep just running through and on my own. It's like, okay, you know, this model makes sense. And I mean, like I said, I think, you know, Preston said something once when he was talking to Plan B prior to, you know, that stock to flow really breaking, was like, all models are, I think even Plan B might've said it, but it was like, you know, all models are wrong, but some are very useful. And that's where I think, like, you know, this is like the way you're lining it out to me, I do appreciate, because you're, you know, you're not discounting all of this, but I'm always like trying to look at it as like, okay, we're still at like maybe 1-2% of full adoption globally.
Well, and we're actually way less. I'll tell you where we're at.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'll tell you where we're at. So based on my measurements, the amount of total money in the world today is about $300 trillion. So that includes 150, there's 150 trillion of sort of money, like M3 money. This is based on measurements by this guy, Matthew Mazinskas on X. Mm-hmm. The government stopped reporting the M3 money supply because they didn't think it was useful or something in the US. And other governments are very opaque about it. But Mazinskas does a lot of research on this money supply. He's been doing it for 10 years. And he's like, got amazing numbers on this money. So he estimates 150 trillion. I think it's somewhere around that number. And then bonds are another 150 trillion. So just Bitcoin as a percentage of money today, it's less than 1%. Okay.
Yeah.
Now we know that the money supply grows at 7% per year globally. Some countries grow at faster rates. Some countries grow at slower rates. China's at 10%. The US is at 6, Europe's at 6, the average is 7. And the value of things relative to the money supply also changes a lot. You know, the value of gold relative to the money supply changes. It fluctuates. It doesn't follow a power law at all. Bitcoin is the only thing that follows a power law relative to the money supply. It's the only thing. And you can see all this on B1M. You can explore the different tabs and kind of see that stuff. And the deeper you look at this power law stuff, the more you realize, well, Bitcoin's this very unique asset. You kind of feel it already, but the power law describes that thing. It's not a model that breaks or doesn't work. It only doesn't work if Bitcoin fails completely, really. It sort of accounts for the growth. So, you know, but you were also, I know you're mentioning the Shiller capes when you were looking at stocks.
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
You know, but you were also, I know you're mentioning the Shiller capes when you were looking at stocks. And that's something else we looked at when we were writing Bitcoin 1 million, is that the Shiller cape is like the highest it's ever been. So it's the idea of the Shiller PE ratios is that we're looking at the price relative to earnings, right? Of these stocks. And this is what Warren Buffett would find and other smart investors in the future. This was part of the fundamentals model of investing in stocks, right? Where you have a company that has some earnings potential and current earnings, and then they have a price of their stock relative to those earnings. And as of right now, this price to earnings is the highest it's ever been. And it's only been growing. So for the past 15 years, I have a chart in this book. It's just been going skyrocketing up. That little dashed line is the trend line of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're basically at an all-time high in valuations of stocks. And you know what else is at an all-time high? The price of a median home to median income in the United States. Mm-hmm. Also at an all-time high. Even though housing supply is at an all-time high. We have more houses per capita than we've ever had. But also the price of those has gone up in the past 15 years from, it used to be 4x the median income. So if the median income was 100K, just for math's sake, we're going to assume, 100K median income, the median home price was 400,000, right? Now, if the median income is 100, the median home price is 750,000. It's almost doubled in 15 years. So there's something about our system that is cheap. And I've been wondering, why is this the case? Why does it feel like the odds are stacked against everyone, you know? And the answer to that really comes down to this Plinko. That money is all flowing into assets. It all ends up in assets because assets appreciate at a higher rate generally than inflation, than the money printer. I'm saying generally because there's one asset that does not. Do you know what that one is?
Bitcoin.
No, yes, but in the negative way, it's bonds.
Ah, okay, yeah, bonds.
No, bonds only work when the value of everything else goes down. So if we have a year where everything else goes down in value, that's a year where bonds can win. And we've seen that historically. I think it was in 2011. That's the only year in the past, 15 years that bonds have won. Bitcoin's won 8 out of 10 past 10 years in terms of year-over-year growth. Gold won 1 year and bonds won 1 year. Gold might win this year. It might be a winner. Or Bitcoin might jump up by the end of the year. We don't know. It's very hard to predict these things. And the power law does not make any predictions about it. Just a measurement. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Mark Moss had a great presentation about Bitcoin starting to take up the $300 trillion bond Mark Moss.
Oh, Mark Moss, yeah, I love his stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so he had a great presentation about Bitcoin taking over the $300 trillion bond market and the $145 trillion fixed income market. And then if you look at even like the Wells Fargo CEO came out and said the products that MicroStrategy B now is starting to take up with like Strike, Strive, all of these different financial assets, they're starting to dig into a lot of those markets. So I think, it's just a matter of time before, Wall Street starts to see all of these other assets and realize, all right, well, why would I put my money into the S&P 500, for example, when, compared to Bitcoin, it's just losing value. And I think the other unique thing too is if you map out the M2 money supply to the S&P 500, I believe since the year 2000, it's either basically just about even or even down. Right. So, if you look at it from like an inflationary perspective, the way that it's looking at it, it's basically the S&P 500 is just breaking even. And another interesting thing that, you lined out the PE ratios. And I think Strategy is really going to, shed some light on this, especially with the new FASB ruling, because Strategy's a PE ratio, I believe, is at like 4.2 or 4.5 after the last earnings. And so it was like 13th in revenue, like, top 100 in market cap, and then like 498th in PE ratio in the S&P 500 or the top 500 companies. Wow. So it's like it's still from where it's at is just extremely undervalued. And then now we're having so many treasury companies come online that, one, I think the companies that have no underlying business, they're probably, there's probably some of those that are going to blow up and these are going to be some of the potential black swans. But eventually every business is going to need to put Bitcoin on their balance sheet to kind of just keep that, cash flow and keep everything steady over time. So that's where I think like just these adoption curves, it's really hard to just nail one thing down because I do think that there's going to be some events like unforeseen, maybe like an FTX type collapse for some major players. But there's always just these new buyers. And that's where I think it is getting a little interesting. And everybody always says, this time is different. But over the weekend, too, we saw, the biggest liquidation event in quote unquote crypto history. Of course, Bitcoin was lumped into that. But, you know, with all these short sellers and everybody kind of coming out of the woodworks, we still held above that 100K mark. And, you know, we dropped like 12% and everybody was like, oh, Bitcoin. I mean, I got text messages. What's going on with Bitcoin? But that 12% drop immediately got scooped up by a lot of these big players. And the ETF inflows this morning, as we're recording it on the 13th, were extremely high. So that's where I think, you know, you're right on the volatility, maybe on the downward side, but I think the upward trajectory, maybe I'm just a moon boy, but the upward trajectory here is like, we have so many people just waiting to buy that once they see this dip, the more people that understand.
But that's Brendan, they were waiting to buy at 10,000. They're waiting to buy at 100,000.
That's
they may not buy until 200,000. And when they buy at 200,000, other people are going to be selling, you know? So
yeah, that's fair.
You know, I think the market dynamic of Bitcoin is so difficult to understand. It's so complex because there's never been anything in the world like it that trades 24/7 anywhere in the world. And that has such huge liquidity. I mean, it's really amazing what Bitcoin has become. And I think that it's still very hard for people to understand. Even though they don't really understand stocks that well, they can conceptually, they get it because their parents were into it. And so, you know, there's a generational shift that's happening in some ways that's causing Bitcoin adoption to go up. People who grew up in the digital age, you know, people like us, we're kind of the last bridge before we had no internet when we were kids. And I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I'm guessing you didn't have internet when you were a kid at some point. Yeah. And we then the internet existed. We're the last generation to have that happen. The future generation is all digital. They completely only think in digital world. And you know, our children will grow up in a world where all they have is AI. They're gonna be exposed to AI from the time they're born, basically. And so in that world, Bitcoin becomes more of a normal thing. It's less of a niche, strange digital thing that people don't understand, right? So part of this is also that decisions, you were talking about how, or we were both talking about how investment advisors in the future are going to be having to recommend Bitcoin for companies, for individuals, whatever. But imagine that also all the money in the world 10 years from now is going to be managed by AI, not by people. It's already occurring. I mean, everyone's using ChatGPT to make their financial decisions already. Help me weigh out these options. Let's talk about, you know, like whatever. You ultimately, humans are the decision makers still, but AI is advising. Mm-hmm. And what do you think AI is going to recommend people put their money into?
Yeah, once we get a good AI, it probably will just say, hey, invest in the best performing asset since it's been
existing. As AI starts to read more evidence like this, this book is like a 360 degree angle or every angle of what you could think about Bitcoin in the future. And we have a chapter predicting that in here too. What happens?
Well, let's dive into it. Tell us a little bit about the book. The purpose behind writing it, and you know, give us a little bit of maybe a sales pitch here of why we should read it.
Well, I'll tell you. So first of all, I've been researching Bitcoin and Satoshi for 10 years, really not just thinking about it, but reading all of Satoshi's posts and emails, reading the code, analyzing early versions of the code base. I became kind of obsessed with this, with Bitcoin in 2014, okay? And so then that kind of led to writing this book last year. So I wrote a book last year called The Big Bitcoin Book. That's like an art book about Bitcoin. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah. Yeah, Fred was actually on the show and showed a...
Showed it to you. Yeah, anyways, it's got really beautiful charts. And this is relevant because there's a page in this book. You know, we cover all the things that came before Bitcoin, all the people that built things, what were they and how were they relevant to Bitcoin or not? And you can kind of open any page in here and find something interesting. There's, you know, Starkness, a good friend of mine. But there's one page in here in particular that I just kept showing to people. And it's a page about what asset do you put your money into, right? And you kind of look at stocks, bonds, real estate, gold, and Bitcoin. and we look at a 15-year time frame. I love this 10 to 15-year time frame because it's something that people can absolutely wrap their heads around, you know? So anyways, there's one page in here about that. That page was the page I kept talking to people the most about. I was like, I have to show you this page in my book. This will really explain it to you because my friend's like, I don't get Bitcoin. Look, I invest in real estate, man. And I'm like, yeah, but think about it in a different way. Let me just show you how real estate could look in 15 years or 20 years or 10 years even. And so that's what sort of turned into this book. That one or two pages in that book were pages we were talking about all the time. And we realized that we needed to build a book that contains all of the tools and arguments mathematically and logically looking into the future and really talking about the future of Bitcoin, not the past. And so we have 21 chapters in here that's all about the future of Bitcoin. First, we talk about sort of the base models, the Bitcoin power law, the money printer, inflation. Then we go into stocks, bonds, real estate, gold, the ETF, MSTR and Bitcoin treasury companies, Bitbonds, stable coins, how those are a path to Bitcoin. Then we talk about scaling fast Bitcoin. And then we talk about the apex predator. So we're kind of promoting this idea of Bitcoin being a shark here, this big orange shark. And, you know, that's a big part. We're going to have something really fun at our event for that. But we have AI and Bitcoin, the quantum risk, governments, psychology of holding, which is sort of how do you make it through these market cycles when they occur, the big booms and busts. Kelly Criterion, which is a rebalancing thing that was developed at Bell Labs. How do you choose how much to allocate to an asset depending on volatility? And then we go into Bitcoin-backed loans, a whole chapter on loans in here. Bitcoin 1 million and Bitcoin 10 million is the final chapter. I'll tell you, the final chapter of this, if you only read one chapter, that's the one. It's so compelling. It's so interesting. You can start there if you want. You don't have to read this book in order. But it is an amazing story that begins with Hal Finney predicting the $10 million per coin in 2009, right? Pretty amazing. So anyways, I'm really excited about the book. I'm really excited about giving everyone these amazing tools to convince themselves and convince other people about why they need to hold Bitcoin.
Yeah, I love to hear it. And then you mentioned your event you got going on. I know this will probably be released shortly after, but tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have this unconference event we do in Santa Monica. We did it last year. We're doing it again this year. We have 200 people come out, no cameras, no photos, no streaming, just conversations. So it's really meant for like a crowd that's very private, that doesn't want to be publicly associated with Bitcoin, for example. But they're interested about Bitcoin. Most of the people who come have gotten into Bitcoin only in the past sort of 5 years. And so it's not like an OG crypto thing. You know, there's none of those people. Most people are just people with real jobs, real careers, you know, traditional jobs and careers, let's say. A lot of retired guys and women who are very interested in Bitcoin, interested in learning more about Bitcoin, and interested in talking to other people that are very into Bitcoin. So it's a Bitcoin only little unconference here in Santa Monica. That's one day only, fully catered, very private. And we have some special guests who come in that are not advertised ahead of time. And it's all about just that one day and connecting and having really great conversations about Bitcoin. So it's called Bitcoin Alpha.
Okay, great. So what was the motivation behind this? And I know you said you can't mention any speakers, but obviously you'll be there. So anybody that you can...
Schedule is actually visible for anyone to see. We don't have speakers per se.
Okay.
But we just have sessions. And the way it works is that there's someone who leads the session. Like, I'm going to lead a session called Self-Custody or Self-Destruct, which is very much about the future of why holding your own keys and holding your own coins is really important to not just you, but to future generations of your family, that you train them how to hold onto those keys outside of the system. And so I'm going to do a session on that where I'm going to talk for the first 10 minutes and then everyone's going to be able to engage. You know, we'll have 40, 50 people in a session and, or maybe as few as 10, and everyone will be able to have a really great conversation about that topic. And whoever's leading the session becomes sort of the moderator of it. We've got great people leading sessions. You know, they're going to be really amazing. You would be incredible if you were going to come. You could do a really great session. So we have some different hosts of different podcasts and stuff coming. And some people that aren't even publicly big Bitcoiners are going to come and do a session, I think. So it's cool. It's a really exciting little event for sort of people in the U.S. to come to, where you don't have to leave the country, or you might be able to walk there. We had a guy come last year who paid in Bitcoin, signed up under a fake name, and came and introduced himself to me as an alias, I think, not his real name. You know, and he was just like, hey, it's the first Bitcoin event I've ever been to. I've been in Bitcoin for 10 plus years, but I just have never wanted to come to an event because I would have had to travel. I would have had to reveal my identity. And this one's so cool because no one's even taking pictures. I really appreciate that. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I love that story, you know. So that's why we do it. We do it because we're here in Santa Monica and we want to have a place. We want to build community here. You know, we talk to Matteo Pellegrini a ton. He comes over to our office all the time. And we love that what he's doing with Orange Pill App. We've kind of made the event, you know, we don't have sponsors. We have like some exhibitors and we're using Orange Pill for our chats and we use Orange Pill to like blast out things. So I love Orange Pill App. I love community building. And this event is such a great human event. So that's what's
yeah, 100%. Well, yeah, now I've got FOMO, man. I'm actually traveling to the Great White North here.
Yeah.
So I'll be in Canada, but maybe in the future, you guys will have to let me know. Maybe I'll make a trip out to Cali and,
We do another one. Yeah. These events, they're amazing. We probably will continue doing them, but we don't commit to it very far in advance. So.
Yeah. I hear you. Well, cool, man. I really appreciate your time. And I feel like this was a great conversation. We maybe have to have you on here in maybe a few months down the road. But why don't you tell people where they can find the retirement calculator, the book, and more about you?
Definitely. I think the best place to go is b1m.io. That's got links to everything on the about page. You can find me, my Twitter account or xtick.com account. And that's where I live most of the time. You can DM me. My DMs are open. I try to answer them when people write me like you did. And the retirement calculator is on B1M. The links to the book are on B1M. And that's my new home over there.
Perfect. Well, I'll put that in the show notes. Everybody go check it out. Check out the retirement calculator. I think it's great. It really opened my eyes. And I think it was a unique spin to everything. So, Ben, thanks so much for coming on. And
This is awesome. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them and I'll see you guys all at the next one.